we heard Joan O'Sullivan's report on labour shortages across the economy as we reopen earlier in the programme. But as we've also been hearing, there's increasing concern at government level about the rising number of COVID cases and hospitalisations and what that means for those reopening plans. So let's talk about all of this now with Higher and Further Education Minister Simon Harris. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Anya.
COVID now, we're on a knife edge, as Philip Nolan said yesterday. Cases up 45%, the growth rate's accelerating. There's a big call, isn't there, for the Cabinet next Tuesday?
There is, and not for the first time. I mean, we can see how quickly things evolve with COVID. About a week ago, I think members of NPHET were talking about how we were on the verge of suppressing the virus. And now, obviously, we have seen over recent days an increase in cases and in hospitalisations as well. But we do need some perspective as well. We're seeing this at a time when more than 90% of our people are fully vaccinated, and we are seeing the benefits of that. I do also, though, think that we have to move away from thinking there's a binary choice when it comes to COVID and reopening. Is it a yes? Is it a no? Is it a proceed? Is it not? I think there's now a third way. So I think the three choices facing government, and we'll have to consult public health experts, NPHET will meet on Monday, and the decision will be Tuesday. But I think there are three genuine options to consider and scrutinise. Proceed, pause, or proceed whilst retaining some safeguards. So I would ask the question, and that's all I'm doing at this stage, because we need to consult with our public health experts. But is there a way of proceeding with more of the reopening whilst perhaps retaining vaccine certs for a little bit longer, or whilst perhaps maintaining face masks in scenarios where they may not have been envisaged a few weeks ago? Because I think, certainly when I talk to people in my own constituency and restaurateurs and the likes, and we heard some of their rep bodies yesterday, if you gave them the option of being able to return to more normal opening whilst keeping some of those safeguards or not, I know which they'd choose.
So you're in favour at the moment of keeping the COVID passes, keeping the 2 metres?
No, what I'm in favour of at the moment is...
Because that would have big implications, wouldn't it, for return to work?
What I'm in favour of at the moment is challenging ourselves as a government, working with public health officials to really scrutinise all three options and not to just think it's a binary choice of a yay or a nay.
In terms of that third option, what would you keep and what would you be chary of?
So the first thing I'd be asking, and government will ask, is if we did keep a vaccine cert, would that mean you could proceed? If you did keep a face mask, would that mean you could proceed? So I think that's the level of scrutiny. And there is also a fourth element.
And will NPHET be providing that advice along those lines?
So I have no doubt that colleagues in government, all of us, will want to know all of the options that are available. And there is also a fourth point worth making, and my colleague the Taoiseach made this yesterday as well, which is around the booster programme. We've taken a decision in Ireland based on medical advice to provide a booster vaccine to people over 80, to people over 65 in nursing homes, and to people with very low immune systems. Is there now benefit in going further? And we're awaiting advice from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee in relation to this. Is there a case for providing a more widespread booster vaccine programme? And I'm reading with great interest what's happened in Israel, where they were faced with similar choices, and they went for the extension of the vaccine certs and the widespread booster vaccine programme, and they seem to have managed to make great progress with the virus. So I suppose I'm saying we're at a different point. This is not 2020. We live in a country now where the overwhelming majority of people are vaccinated. But that does bring me to one other point. We do also live in a country where there are still in and around 300,000 people not vaccinated, and interestingly, around 70,000 people who've had their first dose but haven't yet come forward for a second dose. So trying to make sure that everybody gets fully vaccinated, particularly those who opted to get one dose but maybe haven't yet gotten the second dose too.
You say you've been reading about Israel with interest, and they followed a similar pattern to here. They had a very high level of vaccination, but then the cases started to go up again, even though it was keeping the overall level of morbidity down, nonetheless hospitalisation. So they went ahead with rolling out for the whole population the booster programme. You're in favour of that, are you?
No, I'm very conscious of this. I'm a politician and not a doctor. What I'm in favour of is seeking urgent advice from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee on this. I think there is growing evidence that a more widespread booster programme may have benefits to your population, but it's appropriate that that advice is given by doctors and not politicians. And but it would be useful to get that advice, and I expect government will get advice on booster programmes next week from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee.
You say next week, because we've also been reading that there's some frustration in government level at the pace of recommendations from NIAC. You'd like it to be a bit quicker?
Well, look, I think everybody always likes decisions as quickly as possible, but I'm also sympathetic to the challenge that NIAC have. I know them well from my time in the Department of Health. There's a lot of information and evidence evolving around booster programmes, and I know they're trying to assess all of that and give us the very best decision. But it would be, I think everyone would be unified in the view that it would be useful to get that information as quickly as possible, and ideally next week.
All right. We heard earlier Joan O'Sullivan's report about the labour shortages across the economy. I mean, it's a worldwide issue, but it's hitting here. And the more we reopen, obviously, the bigger an issue it is. You're releasing a skills bulletin today. What is that and how will that help?
So every year in Ireland for around the last 17 years, Sullis, one of my agencies, releases a report, a skills bulletin. And it basically analyses where are there skills shortages in the labour market. And they've identified 8 areas. I think 3 of them are of particular interest and some won't come as a surprise, construction, healthcare, and the whole area of ICT and the digital economy. From my perspective as a Minister for Skills, we really have to do 2 things. We have to take immediate measures, and I would contend we did a lot on that in the budget around apprenticeships, increasing further education places, abolishing the levy for post-leaving cert courses, providing employers with a financial incentive to take on an apprentice. But we also need to do more than that. We need to change the structure. So next month I will be embarking on a very big reform of the process where school leavers get their information on their options. We will, for the very first time on the 5th of November, when a leaving cert student goes to the CAO website, they'll see options on apprenticeships, on further education and training, as well as the traditional university options. I think we've narrowed the options for our young people far too early, and that has contributed. And the second thing I'll be doing is commissioning the OECD at the end of this year to do a deep dive on Ireland's skills policy. What are we doing well? What could we be doing better? And what are other countries doing too?
Because the people everyone's crying out for here and across the world, they're people, they're chefs, they're bakers, they're drivers,
yes,
they're
exactly.
care workers. They're the people who do that work that keeps the world turning. In the short term, what employers were saying to Joan O'Sullivan earlier was, would you look at visas? Because they need more people coming in. They've lost a lot of the people who used to work here. They need more visas issued. They need more workers from outside the EU.
And yes, and government is actively considering the issue of work permits, but you're right to reference that that is a short-term measure, because I do think we need to look at, we do live in a country now with a lot of people who've lost their jobs, with a lot of people who do need reskilling and upskilling, a lot of people who want to get back into the workforce as well. So my focus as a Minister for Skills, as a Minister for Further Education, is to provide people with every opportunity to have those careers. So what does that mean in real terms? Well, at the moment, 2019, the first kind of year before COVID, the last year before COVID, if you like, we were training about 6,000 construction apprentices a year. That'll be 9,000 by next year. On retrofitting, because we've got to be serious about the climate agenda, we're opening 5 centres of excellence to train people in retrofitting skills. We've 2 open, one in Waterford and one in Leash Offaly. We will open another 3 in Cork and Sligo and Limerick
And while welcome, it's all a couple of years, isn't it, before they're all, you know, through the system and out and actually contributing.
That's true. But remember, it's a continuous pipeline. So there will be many apprentices emerging from the system next year as well. But you're right, it's a combination of short courses as well. So there'll be 20,000 additional further education places as a result of the budget, where perhaps somebody who's been unemployed or somebody who's looking to upskill can access courses. And remember, we've abolished that PLC levy where people were having to pay €200 to access further education as well. That's now abolished as a result of the budget. But I do think we need to have, and I'd have this conversation with young people and their parents, if you're serious about tackling the housing crisis and want to help, come help us build homes. There are many, many construction opportunities, good high paid jobs, good quality jobs. If you're serious about climate, come help us retrofit our homes as well. Look at all of the options that are available to you. And to industry, I would say, come work with us. And I'll give you just one example. Myself and Minister Hildegard Nocton met with the Freight Transport Association of Ireland. They were talking about the shortage of HGV drivers. We met with them. We met with IT Sligo. We've now put a new apprenticeship programme in place, kicking off in January, the first HGV apprenticeship programme in Ireland. So it's this collaboration between our citizens, industry and government.
Another issue in terms of your brief, Minister, you said you'd be having the plan on third level funding, and this is, you know, the big question, what's going to happen with the fees? Can you rule out, before you see that plan, can you rule out the introduction of loans or increasing fees above €3,000?
Yes. I think student loans is a failed policy. I think it's one of those policies that people can say work on paper but doesn't work in reality. We've seen it introduced in Northern Ireland. We've seen it introduced in the UK. I don't like the idea. I think it, particularly for people from socioeconomically disadvantaged backgrounds, it implies they must leave college with a lot of debt and the likes. I just don't think it's a good idea.
We're seeing economic pressures. For instance, in terms of accommodation, you know, the situation with the food distribution down in UCC. Already that's putting such pressure pressure on so many students that economically they can't afford to take up the place or sustain the place that they won academically.
And look, in this budget we made a number of big changes, and it's just a start. But we made a number of big changes. We increased the maintenance grant for the first time in 10 years. But more importantly than that, we increased the income threshold, so more families will now qualify for the SUSE student grant. And I hear a lot of people saying, you only increased the grant by €200. That's not true, because we changed the rules around distance, around adjacency, where up until now you had to have your family home 45 kilometres from college to get the higher grant. We've reduced that to 30. That will mean some students living 32 kilometres away from college, their grant will go up by €2,000 from next September. Today, indeed after I talk to you, I'm going to meet all of the students' unions presidents from Dublin to talk to them about student accommodation. I think we've had a very good and robust debate about this.
You were critical of Owen Keegan's sarcasm this week, weren't you?
Well, it was. I think it would have been an awful oddball if you weren't. I mean, it was really an inappropriate, it was a really inappropriate comment to make. But, you know, I don't want to get into the politics of personality. I want to get into fixing the problem. We've been too reliant on private providers in relation to purpose-built student accommodation. I want to, working with Minister Dara O'Brien, allow our colleges, including our institutes of technology and our technological universities, access cheap finance, borrowing, to build purpose-built college-owned accommodation. But in return, I want to make sure that college accommodation is provided to students at an affordable rate. And my Secretary General on my behalf met with college presidents and representative bodies last week to tell them to prepare to bring forward proposals. And I'll be meeting with Minister Dara O'Brien on this matter again next week, and meeting with the students' unions today.
You've talked a lot about your plans for your ministry, Simon Harris, but you know, you said in the Dáil 4 years ago you were going to cut scoliosis waiting lists within 4 months. We heard Adam Terry's case being raised this week, systemic failure, said the Taoiseach. Also the case of 7-year-old Rosie, cancel surgeries. There are 200 other children like that. You know, politicians make great plans, but it's the systemic failure that people, children, get let down again and again by politicians like you not delivering.
Yeah, look, I think about this an awful lot. I made a commitment, indeed, in RTE, I made a commitment in relation to scoliosis waiting times, and I made it in good faith, and I made it based on information given to me by the then head of the HSE. It's very clear in those comments I referenced that fact as well. But you know what I absolutely know to be true? As a result of setting that target, we did apply a level of focus, resource and attention to this issue like never before. We did significantly reduce the waiting times. We did see many children get their scoliosis operation in 4 months or less. We did see a new theatre open. We did see new consultants hired. We did see more operations carried out in relation to scoliosis than ever before. We did make huge progress. And I know, had we not set that target, that wouldn't have happened. But equally, I know when I heard the case of Adam this week, and as a parent myself, I can only imagine how heartbreaking it is to see your child in pain and in agony. I know the Taoiseach spoke to Adam and his family, I think, yesterday. Our work here is far from done. And I know my successor, Minister Donnelly, remains determined now as we prepare waiting list action plans to really make further progress. But
We've had waiting list initiatives before, and they come along and ministers make big problems and they get nice headlines. And then, do you know, over time, something else comes along and there's another crisis and another crisis and the lists build up again. Isn't that the problem
initiatives? I'm not sure you mean it as such, but I mean, it's not about getting nice headlines. It's about a genuine view that we had in our health service, in our government, in our country, that we wanted to make real progress in relation to this, and we did, but we haven't yet gotten to where we needed to get to. A number of children, many children, got scoliosis operations quicker than they would have otherwise, and many got them in 4 months or less. There are complexities around some of these conditions as well. There's a broader piece, and I don't wish to stray into my successor's territory. There's a broader piece now about the reform of the health service, about really rebooting and re-energising the Sláinte Care programme post the dealing with the COVID pandemic, in terms of how we structurally change the health service to deliver better on these matters. But I do know, even in the context of COVID, I do know we saw more children get scoliosis operations. We've also seen the waiting lists for scoliosis operations fall, even in the context of COVID. But that's not to be in any way.
And we're still seeing operations being cancelled, children having to go abroad, you know, and it's hard, you know, I everybody feels it. But the thing is, the political system doesn't seem to be able to solve it.
I think that is why we're going to have to make some big and bold decisions as envisaged by the Sláinte Care report in the coming months. And I know my colleague, Minister Donnelly, is fully committed to that. Big and bold decisions around new consultant contracts, around ensuring that we remunerate our consultants in such a way that it's an attractive place to work, that we can retain people, and also the whole idea of an integrated health service and regional structures. But I wouldn't like out of I would like you to know that the people in the HSE applied a level of focus and energy to reducing scoliosis waiting times like I had never seen before and did make progress. And that was the benefit of the target, accepting fully that there's work still to be done.
Okay, and a final question, Minister. The complaint to the Committee on Procedure and Privileges about McCarthy claiming you were leaking from the Cabinet, have you made that yet or do you intend to do so?
I've spoken to the Kim Corley in relation to this issue. I expect to hear back from him shortly. I can assure you this is not consuming much of my time, so that's where that matter currently stands.
And do you intend to lay a complaint?
I intend to wait to hear back from the Kim Corley in relation to the matter. I've made my views really clear on this. I welcome the public comments that Kim Corley made in relation to this matter as well, but a very busy agenda, a lot of work, and political slurs aren't taking up much of my time.
Simon Harris, Minister for Higher and Further Education, thank you.